Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Happy Sunday morning to you. Thank you for being here with us. Time for the week in health. What's going on to keep you on the healthy side this week? For that, we go to Dr. Jeremy Silver, who is the medical director, emergency medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Dr. Silver, welcome. Nice to have you back with us.
Good morning, Dean. Thanks for having me.
The big story this morning is the condition of the Pope. It's been the lead story. What can you tell us about the what the Pope is going through? He's hospitalized, apparently has pneumonia in both lungs. His condition is being described as a complex clinical picture. What can you tell us about the, not about his specific case, but about the pneumonias and the kinds of things that have put the Pope in the hospital?
Sure. Well, my heart goes out to the guy, just complicated by nature of being 88 years old as he is and in the hospital, definitely creates a lot of concerns and definitely can make things complicated. We know that that Pope Francis was hospitalized last week for bronchitis. That's an infection of the upper airways or the tubes that carry the air down into the sacs of the lungs. And then we learned, as you mentioned, that he had developed a polymicrobial, that just means many organisms or more than one organism, infection of the respiratory tract. So when we think about the respiratory tract, we think about the upper part of the respiratory tract. That's like your sinuses and your throat. And then the lower respiratory tract, and that's the airways that carry the oxygen out into your lungs, which are a series of sacs that allow that oxygen to then pass into your bloodstream. And so initially, it's very common to develop a sort of a bronchitis-type picture where you get inflammation of those airway passages that then turns into or becomes a pneumonia where the sacs or those little air sacs in the lungs become filled with pus or bacteria or viruses. And so then things can get very serious very quickly, and there's just a host of complications, one of which being just being elderly in and of itself lends itself to difficulty fighting off disease. Your chest wall muscles aren't as strong. Those are sort of part of the primary immune system when you have pneumonia to cough out the illness, whether it's a virus or a bacteria or even a fungus. And then older people may not present with classic symptoms of pneumonia, which you think of as fever, shortness of breath, cough. Some folks may just present with confusion, and that may delay diagnosis. And then, of course, as you age, your immune system is not what it once was, and you don't fight off disease as well. Your immune cells or the soldiers of your immune system are weaker. And then lastly, we know that this individual, the Pope, was hospitalized for pneumonia previously and had it so severe at the time he apparently had to have a portion of his lung removed. So you've got a lot of factors here at play. And things can kind of spiral quickly, so it is very concerning.
Yeah, the fact that he had a portion of his lung removed as a younger man, does that make this more difficult for him to recover from the pneumonia that with which he is living now?
Well, yes, because the lungs basically take oxygen from the ambient air and pass it into your bloodstream, and so if you're missing a section of lung, your ability to utilize oxygen becomes less. And so if you're having the rest of your good lung that remains fighting off infection or filled with virus or bacteria and immune cells, there's not a lot of tissue left to do the work of breathing. And that's where other things come into play, like mechanical ventilation, where sometimes they'll put in a breathing tube to help you breathe, or there are certain specialty devices that can be applied from the external of the patient to deliver oxygen at a high flow rate. So there's a lot of different treatment options, but it kind of depends on what's happening with the patient.
Yeah, they did say that he had rested comfortably overnight, but was on external oxygen as well. So that kind of jives with what you're talking about of trying to get more oxygen in that he might not be able to do on his own at this point.
Yeah, the other thing that I had read, Dean, was something referencing asthma. So if he does have an underlying condition, some people think of asthma like COPD. They're kind of in the same ballpark of disease where for a variety of reasons, either your own immune system or from smoking, you develop a reactivity. And so you get inflammation of the airways very quickly. And so anytime you get sick with an upper respiratory or lower respiratory infection, you can develop an asthma attack, if you will, or a COPD exacerbation, as it's called, and that can complicate things as well.
So treatment for something like this, I mean, normally what I've always heard is when somebody has pneumonia, they put them on antibiotics right away, and usually that, you know, takes care of it within a few days or a week. Is that the case for something like this, or because of his age and some other mitigating factors, would there be more to it than that?
Well, there could. Of course, as you mentioned, there's antibiotics for a variety of pneumonias. We've heard of the walking pneumonia, the mycoplasma pneumonia. There's an antibiotic for that. And, of course, strep pneumonia has multiple antibiotics that we can use. And even some of the viruses, like COVID-19 or influenza, have antivirals. But we also worry about those bacteria getting into the bloodstream and causing something called sepsis, which can become rapidly fatal. So there's a variety of considerations there. You know, pneumonia, it kind of sounds like one of these diseases people, quote unquote, get. But, you know, 1 million adults are hospitalized for pneumonia every year, and about a third of those that are hospitalized will be gone within a year. They'll die. So it's a very, very serious disease. The other factor that I'd like to point out is that there is a prevention that's available, and that is the vaccine. So the influenza vaccine is available to patients 6 months and older, the flu shot. And then, of course, there's a pneumococcal vaccine for the strep pneumonia, and that's available for adults 50 and older. And then the CDC recommends adults 75 and older, as well as some who are over 60 who are at increased risk for the RSV, obtain the RSV vaccine. And those vaccines can help, if they don't prevent the disease, they can help make it a lot less severe.
Would prednisone have been part of a treatment for the conditions with which the Pope is living with right now?
It certainly could. In fact, we use prednisone in pneumonia not infrequently to help with some of the excessive inflammation. The immune system is helpful because it does fight off disease, but it can actually get overreactive and then attack the person themselves, which we think of when we think of the COPD exacerbation or the asthma or something called bronchospasm, where the airways just get so inflamed from all of the viral or bacterial particles that they start to close up. And so prednisone is a great antidote to that, and it's often given in conjunction with antivirals or antibiotics.
Yeah, somebody on our text line it was asking because they noticed that his physical appearance seems to have been a little larger than it had been normally. And I know that when people are on prednisone, sometimes there is a swelling or a puffiness that occurs as a result of that.
Yeah, great observation. People also get copious fluids when they're in the hospital and sick with pneumonia, and so that may also be playing a role.
All right, well, we'll keep our prayers open for the Pope. He is an extraordinary person. Pope Francis remaining hospitalized, had a restful night, according to the Vatican. And we'll keep you posted as we hear any changes in his condition. When we come back with Dr. Silver, the measles outbreak seems to not be going away here in the U.S. Let's talk about that next. 9:52, The Week in Health, with Dr. Jeremy Silver, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. So this measles outbreak started kind of isolated, but it is spreading around the United States. I know it is in Illinois, but in the state of Texas, it seems to be unusually explosive, right?
Largest outbreak in 30 years in the state of Texas is what I understand, and I think they've reached 90 cases so far. And they think that that number is probably going to continue to rise for some time.
What about here in Illinois? Is that something that we should be concerned with? Should parents be concerned with their kids? Back in the day, we all had measles vaccinations. Does that make us safe from it? Or, you know, because we had it such a long time ago, do we need to talk to our doctors about getting revaccinated?
Yes, I think everybody needs to be worried about measles as the vaccination rates have gone down. These outbreaks are going to become more and more common. You know, when 95% of the community has the vaccine, at least one dose, you have something called herd immunity, where it just makes it incredibly difficult due to statistics for these outbreaks to occur. But when that immunity drops, you've got a problem. And, you know, in terms of the vaccine, you know, even if you just have one dose, that's helpful. Two doses, you get up to, I think, 97% effectiveness against the virus. Now, you mentioned, should somebody get revaccinated? Anyone who was vaccinated before 1968, yes, they should get at least one dose of the live attenuated vaccine to bring them up to speed. And anybody after that point, if they've only had one dose, they should get a second. But those that have had two are fully immune and in good shape.
All right, something to talk to the doctor about. I'm pretty sure I was a pre-1968 measles vaccination kid back then. You had talked about, you know, flu and COVID vaccines with regard to the Pope. Lots of people on our text line asking about this morning. Somebody from 847 is saying, can you ask the doctor if there is a need for a second dose of the COVID-19 vaccine?
Yeah, what I would say is it's all very dependent on when you had your last dose. And so the best thing that you can do is take your vaccination card and get to your primary care doctor. These are the folks that are so good at tracking and monitoring all the vaccines and the timing and also personalizing those vaccines to your individual health status. But it's a great idea to stay on top of that because many people are up for a booster at this point in time.
630 area code. My husband had both COVID and influenza A at one time. Is that common?
It is. You know, we used to think one virus at a time. And I think the pandemic kind of blew that out of the water as far as our understanding of viruses. And so, yes, it's very common to have both. There's some, you know, in some cases we've seen three viruses, particularly in kids, as they're being exposed to these pathogens for the first time. So, yeah, not unusual to see it. I'm sorry that happened. I hope he's doing better.
847 area code. I was born in 1947, had the polio vaccine in grade school, polio vaccine now, which, by the way, today is the anniversary of the first dose of polio vaccine. I think it was 1954, before my time. But how revolutionary that was, right, doctor, that after so many people had suffered with polio, that suddenly there was a vaccine and completely changed the game on that.
I mean, a great example of like you say, completely changing a disease that was totally debilitating and widely impactful in terms of the paralysis and even death from the disease. And now it's just so rare, at least in areas of the world where the vaccine is available. So, yeah. great story of public health.
Yeah. So, if somebody had, like our texter, had the polio vaccine when they were in grade school, do they need to get another? Do you need to get revaccinated for that?
You know, Dean, it may depend on the vaccine that they've had. I'm not a specialist, and I'm not up to speed on polio, so I don't want to give misinformation. What I would recommend, again, is talk to your primary care doctor, or sometimes the CDC website has good information related to this type of thing.
Yeah, somebody from 847 makes an observation. With spring break approaching, so many students will be traveling south to Mexico and to Texas, where the measles are a little bit out of control right now. So, I mean, are there precautions people can take if they are traveling to areas where the measles are more predominant than here?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I think I would stay away from areas where there's been an outbreak personally. But if that's not possible, those droplet masks are very helpful to prevent spread of disease. And certainly, if you come across somebody with fever and a rash, I would keep my distance.
708 area code, what is the time frame for receiving pneumococcal vaccines?
And I'm going to guess they're asking how old do I need to be? And typically it's 50, and those over 50 are eligible. But in terms of whether those get redosed, I don't know off the top of my head, and I again would point them to the CDC website or to their primary care doctor.
Pneumococcal vaccine, is that the pneumonia vaccine?
Correct. Okay. Correct.
All right, just under a different name, so... there you go with that. Here's 630. If I got an MMR shot when I was a kid, do I need another?
Yeah, so the MMR is the measles, mumps, and rubella, and it's a two-dose vaccine. So typically the first dose you get about a year, and then another dose at 4 to 6 years. And so if you only had one dose, it's definitely recommended to get a second.
Is it too late to get a flu and COVID vaccine? I'm going to guess the answer
not at
is
all.
No. Yeah, absolutely not.
Not at all. Go for it.
Go for it. Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Always a pleasure, Doc. Have a great day today. Thank you.
Take care. Thanks, Dean.